The next stop on my New York adventure took me to Midtown Manhattan to speak with Stuart Craigie at the Whitby Hotel. Completing a trilogy of podcasts I've recorded with the Ferndale Hotel, spanning London and New York. In our conversation, we really focus on the difference between the two cities in terms of supplying and buying wine and hospitality careers. Enjoy.
I'm going to start with my wine story, I guess. Where do I go back to? It starts at the very, very north of Scotland, actually, in a small island called the Orkney Islands. I was brought up there when I was a child. My parents owned a beautiful little seafood restaurant called the Creel. And I remember kind of the first time I kind of got into thinking about wine. It was actually not even wine. It was sherry. And our wine supplier up there in the north of Scotland was a guy called Duncan McLean. And we did this amazing kind of sherry tasting menu with seafood. And you can imagine the langoustines and the scallops and the fresh crab and everything coming out of the cold waters in the North Sea. And we had to pair the food together with the wine. And at that point, I was actually cooking a lot with my dad, who was the chef. My mum was running the front of house. And that kind of sparked the first light for me. But I didn't really get into wine at that point. But that was the kind of first time where it kind of stuck in my mind that it was something that important, you know. Mm-hmm. They went with food. And then my dad went off to Australia, and he did a two-week tour there with our wine supplier as well. I could see it was something that was taken really seriously in our industry. At this point, I was probably about 16 or 17. Following on from that, I moved down to Edinburgh and started studying hotel management and kind of got a bit more involved in the industry. And I think the first kind of real exposure to great wine for me was a place called Prestonfield House. I worked with a sommelier there called Stuart Ski in Edinburgh, and he was an incredibly knowledgeable guy. And they have hundreds and hundreds of wines at Prestonfield. It's this old kind of stately home owned by a guy called James Thompson, who owns the Witchery by the Castle in Edinburgh and the Rhubarb Restaurant. And Prestonfield House is the hotel that they have there. And I was a waiter at that point, and I kind of really started to get interested. I started picking the sommelier's brain and kind of tasting wines back of house and asking, you know, every time they opened something nice from Bordeaux. So they did an amazing Bordeaux and Burgundy list. We'd always kind of sneak into the still room, taste it together before we served it to the guests. And again, I kind of got into wine at that point, but it really took off for me, I guess, when I completed the graduate program with Ferndale Hotels in London. And I got put through the WSET Kosh Level 1, and then I did WSET Level 2 with Sarah Williams, who you've already done a podcast with. And she kind of really took my wine passion and knowledge to a new level, because it wasn't just kind of at work that we discussed wine. It was outside of work, and it was the wine list, and it was, you know, tasting on the WC courses. And fortunately enough, I was really keen to get level three done, and Sarah supported me through that as well, and we always did blind tastings that worked together. And I think that's where the passion really kind of blossomed for me, and Sarah was a kind of a mentor in that right, and helped me with the wine list and would invite me to tasting with suppliers, and we'd go out to industry tastings together. And that's really when I got into the nitty and gritty and started to learn more about terroirs and regions and grape varietals and different producers and styles of wines, and to pair them with food and how to actually compose a wine list and pricing strategies. And I guess it was a development, but that passion was kind of always there from passion for the industry was there from a young age, working at my parents' restaurant when I was about 16 or 17. Yeah. So, I remember I was working at Prestonfield House in Edinburgh, and I'd finished my degree in hotel management. I really didn't know what to do with myself, to be honest. So I started applying for some graduate management programs, and Ferndale Hotels was one that came up. And they do this wonderful two-year course where you kind of spend 6 months in every department, and I was accepted onto that in London in 2012. So I spent 2 years doing that, and I did the opening at Ham Yard, which was an amazing experience. So 2014, we opened Ham Yard. And I started as a food and beverage supervisor there, and ended up kind of progressing through restaurant and bar floor manager, then up to the restaurant manager. And like I said, got more involved with the wine list. But also, I mean, we don't have SOMs at Ferndale, but so you kind of get more involved. You're also managing the team of people and standards and all that kind of stuff. And we started using the Coravan and getting nice wines on with the glass, and some more kind of interesting things that I think we hadn't really seen in our group, because Sarah's got such a passion for wine. And then moving on from there, actually, I did take a small break from Ferndale at one point. Just before I came out to New York, I went off and worked at a restaurant called Trinity in Clapham, I'm sure you've heard of. I decided to leave in January 2017, I left, and I went down to Trinity to work kind of helped with the wine program, and it was the most amazing experience. I tasted more great wines in kind of 3 months than I have in my life, to be honest. And it was an amazing experience. I felt quite bad because I had to make a kind of sudden exit at Trinity because the opportunity in New York came up. I got a call from our director of operations, Anna Jackson, who asked me to fly out to New York almost immediately to look after the Whitby after I'd left. And it was kind of like a take it or leave it offer, which was amazing. But it meant I had to kind of part ways with Trinity very quickly, and which was a shame because it was amazing working with Adam Byatt and the restaurant there, because it's top quality. So so that brought me to New York anyway, and the opportunity was sensational opportunity to come out to New York and live and work. To start with, it was a bit of a uphill struggle because you're moving to Manhattan and when this hotel had just been open for 2 months. So it's a new culture for me. Not even just talking about wine, but talking about employment laws here, and about the way people work, and about the culture of how servers are paid. For example, tipping out servers is very different in New York to London, and all these kind of things. So it took me a little bit to kind of get up and running, but after a few months I started to enjoy myself and get a team around me. And I brought actually a server I worked with at Hamyard over as one of our managers here, who was living in New York. And I would say after about 4 months I started to work on the wine list. Probably it took me that amount of time just to kind of find my feet and find my bearings. Then I started to reach out to our suppliers here in New York. So we've got some fantastic suppliers who we've got a sister property downtown called the Crosby. Mm-hmm. So obviously they've been open for 9 years, and they've built up a very strong kind of relationship with a lot of New York wine distributors who I kind of was able to get in and start talking about wine. Started going to tastings, started looking at the menu, mm-hmm. started doing a few small changes because I didn't, our wine list was almost similar to Crosby's when we opened, but I kind of wanted to put my own stamp on it, and took a bit of time, but I'm getting there now. I'm really starting to enjoy what I'm doing, and I think it's a balancing act because it's all about, I guess, knowing your clientele, mm-hmm. and knowing which neighbourhood you're in and what the culture is, because I think there's three sides to choosing a wine list, in my opinion. One is pleasing the suppliers, obviously, and keeping good relationships. One is pleasing myself. I don't want to say I've got, I want to have wines that I enjoy the less, but I guess more importantly it's about having wines that your guests are going to enjoy as well, because I may enjoy drinking a funky orange wine or a Pet Nat or something that's a bit different, but a lot of our guests in Midtown who are corporate lawyers and in the fashion industry, they're often going for the big names and the Grand Marks and the Grand Cru and things like that, and they want something they can recognise immediately, which is fantastic, so I have to always try to link in with them as well.
As ever, there's loads and loads that you brought up there, but before we kind of, I guess, go a little bit more in depth on what you've done here and what that means by putting your mark on the list here, which I'm really keen to explore. I'm interested that you were talking about working with suppliers and like going out to trade tastings in London. Would you be able to do a bit of a compare and contrast with what that's like over here in New York?
Yeah, I think I will compare and contrast. Slightly difficult for me because I would say I'm in a slightly different role in New York compared to London. I probably have more of an influence here because at the end of the day, I think Sarah was still in charge of the wine buying at Hamyard and making the final decisions, but I was always attending the tastings. But I would definitely talk about the differences because, in my opinion, there are quite a lot, I feel like when we were in London, everything was always very scheduled, very organised, very structured, and you'd go out to tastings and they would come into the Hamyard at the certain times it was allocated. I think compared to New York, in my opinion, I think Owen Kenny, who you met before as well, would back me up on this. He was here for 7 weeks, and he saw a lot of this as well. Like the suppliers here, there's so many of them. There's hundreds and hundreds of different suppliers, and they just come into the bar very, very, very regularly, in the middle of lunch service, and they kind of hound you down. They know your name. I don't know how they always get my name, but they always have it, and they come in and they have bags and bottles they want to taste with me. And at first, when I first got here, I was often just saying, yeah, let's taste. And I kind of got to the point where I found I was wasting my time, I was wasting their time. I was like, we need to really start to think about who our suppliers are, who are we building relationships with, and what are the most important people to taste with. So I ended up just kind of starting to turn people away and say, if you've not scheduled an appointment, I'm not able to taste them. We have about eight kind of core suppliers on our books at the moment in New York. There's a couple of kind of huge corporations, Empire and Southern, who kind of almost monopolize the entire drinks market in New York. They're great. They're very supportive of our hotels. And they've also got lots of subdivisions, so that all the subdivisions come in and try to taste with you as well, which can become quite a lot. I have a close relationship with kind of some of the suppliers called MS Walker and Skernick, and they have got really, really good books. They bring in a lot of really great wines. And also just the buying of wine is kind of slightly different here as well when you think about what can be offered by a supplier. So when a supplier like Skernick comes in, if they carry a wine, for example, we take, for example, the La Spinetta, Barolo, and La Campe 2006 from them, and they're the only supplier in the whole of New York that's allowed to carry that wine because it's sold to them, and they have to sell it to every single restaurant in Manhattan at exactly the same price for one bottle. And then what you get is called case breaks on bottles, so it might be $40 for a bottle, but if you buy two cases it might be $38 if you buy four cases or five cases, and then you get breaks on each case. But it has to be offered to every single restaurant. There's no favoritism. There's no bias. You can't even, for example, ask them to hold. Could you hold me a few cases of this wine until I need it for, you know, buy the glass in the next few months? It's shown as favoritism towards certain restaurants. So that you can't do things like that. You have to do what's called bill and hold, where you actually have to purchase the wine. If you don't have space to store it in our hotel, they'll hold it for us and they'll give us some at a time. So things like that is a little bit different from London. And also I think there's a lot of, well, how would I describe it, there's a lot of support here. So, you know, the suppliers will ask, you know, they will often come into your restaurant and have lunches with you if you support them, and they'll support you back and forth, you know, because this kind of relationship is built through working with other suppliers, you know. And there's a lot of industry events as well, I recognise too. You get invited to so many things, so many dinners and lunches and days out. And we went to Veuve Clicquot hold a polo event every year, so that's something as well that we got invited to. Me and my general manager Catherine went to that. It was a lovely day out. But yeah, I think I don't know really how to describe it, but it's it seems more intense. I think everything in New York seems more intense, and I think the wine industry and the reps are quite, unless you just sometimes have to tell to come in at a certain time, you know. But it's something I guess, again, is maybe it's a cultural thing, because coming from Britain we're all quite reserved and you kind of have your times to do things and you want, you know. But I think the culture here is a bit more outspoken and a bit more like capitalistic in a sense, and everyone's out to get a piece of the pie. And it was just took a little while, I guess, for me to manage that. And also at the same time, I think I took a slow approach to the wine list here and to the suppliers, because our beverage purchaser down at Crosby, he'd built such a wonderful relationship with all our suppliers. Obviously, we're a new hotel here. I'm very keen to put my own stamp on the wine list, like I said. But what I wanted to consider when I was doing that was those three points I said, was our guests, my own passion for wine, and also the suppliers. So the last thing I wanted to do was storm in here all guns blazing, change the entire wine list, and break down a 10-year relationship with our suppliers. So it's something I consider, and I think a year later I'm still kind of working on changes and still trying to find my feet and make sure that I keep everybody happy. So for example, in London, I used to run a wine club by myself. I used to run a wine club every week and teach the team on you know, the different regions of the world and the wines that we had in the menu. But in New York, I've had several suppliers offer to do that for me, you know, and that's kind of an encouragement to they'll showcase all of their products, and if we choose more wines from them, they're more than happy to come and support us and train us. And they'll they have, like, for example, Empire and Southern, they've got a big enough team of reps and hotel activation managers and hotel segment trainers and all these kind of things, that they can actually go into the industry and say, right, Whitby, we'll come there every Tuesday at 4 o'clock, and we'll do Italy one day, Spain the next day, and X, Y, and Z throughout the month because they're able to support their, you know, and that is because they can't flex on price, I guess, that the way that they try to encourage us to support, have this wonderful relationship is through other means, you know, and that may be wine dinners, it may be some kind of like event that we're going out to, or it may be coming in and having, you know, hosting their CEOs or their VPs in the restaurant for like a 10 top dinner because that's where they want to choose to come to the Whitby and have dinner with us and that kind of thing, you know. So it's it's a slightly, like you said, it's a kind of bit of both ends, you know. But then you end up building a good relationship. And like I said, I kind of started off where I didn't really know where to go, but you soon find out who your suppliers are and who the right people to talk to are and who the people to build relationships with are and who, you know, who the most people are.
Fantastic, yeah, okay. And really now I do want to bring it right back into the hotel, and I'm fascinated around the idea of careers in hospitality, and you know, that was certainly... for me, one of the big things that came out from the conversation with Sarah, and you've started talking a bit about, you know, running your own wine clubs, and yeah, it's not so much a compare and contrast, but I guess it's more a case of as you are at this stage now, you know, what's your kind of idea around like career progression within the team here? You know, what are people looking for in terms of the support, and have you got anything that you'd like to share about how you feel the best ways for you to support them in their career aspirations?
I think it's a good question, and also it's kind of compares to London, it contrasts to London quite a lot as well. So I'd like to compare some aspects of career development in New York compared to London. I'm at a stage now where I kind of moved here 1 year ago, and the first 6 months was kind of all about getting structure in the team, and kind of like I was spending a heck of a lot of time on the restaurant floor, you know, like 10 hours a day, working really hard to kind of iron out any kinks or teething issues that we had with the opening. But touch wood, since January I've had the same team, so that's 7 months into the year, and we've not had any turnover, which is great. Got four managers who now are all just doing an amazing job, and I think now is the point where I'm really looking at developing them into what they want to achieve with either Ferndale or in the hospitality industry itself. And when it comes to wine, obviously I've done up my WSET level 3. I'm going to be going out to California in the fall to do my training to become a certified WSET trainer, so I can train levels 1 and 2, and we'd love to get that kickstarted in the hotel and kind of get really people really kind of involved in wine, and not just thinking of it as something at work, but you know, passion and kind of a lifestyle and something that we talk about, like we created in London, that we talk about when you're not just in the restaurant, maybe when you're sitting in the break room about what you had last night. And then also with the team itself, I've just kind of started doing my performance reviews in the last few weeks and looking at where everybody wants to go. Hopefully they all want to stay with Ferndale Hotels because it's a great company. And, you know, my job is to inspire people and make sure that they believe in that concept and that brand. And there's always rumours about Mr. and Mrs. Kemp opening new sites in Manhattan. I'm not sure if there's anything confirmed yet, but I would love to hope that someday there will be. And moving into, you know, F&B manager roles and getting everybody kind of just trained up. Not, I mean, for me, instilling just passion in people is really important because it can be hard sometimes to get people, you know, in the industry to sort of really care about what they're doing and really care about wine and really care about beverage and cocktails and whiskey. And when you start to get that, they just start to learn themselves, you know, and develop. So I think it's, for me, I just like to pass on my passion and what I love about the industry, you know. But development is also, I would say, interesting on different levels here. Take, for example, London compared to New York when it comes to servers, if we're not talking about managers. 90% of my promotions in London was always internal. So I was always looking at promoting, you know, my servers to head waiters or waiters to managers or waiters to supervisors kind of thing. So that was always the natural progression, you know, and that's always where you'd go. Here it's a little bit different. You know, you often get what's called a career waiter or career server, and people who are quite happy doing that job. Why? Because The culture of tipping here is very different, you know. So it's very common in New York that that the servers working in the restaurant will take home considerably more than the managers working on the floor. So how do you convince somebody to take a massive, and I'm not just saying a pay cut, I'm not just saying a pay cut by a few hundred dollars, it could be up to $500 a week pay cut to go from a server to a manager. In my time here, I've had one person promoted internally from a server to manager, Katie Jones, and she's a great example of what can be achieved, you know, when you really want to focus and put your mind to it. And she's doing an amazing job in the restaurant upstairs, and she's kind of in charge of all of our training program there. So she trains the team on all new menus, menu testing, food dishes, just our standards and SOPs, and she's thriving, you know, really blazing the company brand. And I see a bright future for her, you know. So somebody I want to work closely with, and it's a development. And when somebody wants to decide their career's hospitality, you know, I think that, you know, it's endless opportunities. But some of the servers are more than happy. You know, there's a lot of, you know, acting in New York and theater, and they've got great personalities, and they really care about what they do, and they're in the telling, they're wonderful with their guests, they're exactly what we want. But developing to the next step is not always what they're looking to do, you know. It depends what level you're at, I guess. I mean, I'm sure if you went to some 2-Michelin-star restaurant, it might be a different perspective. But we have a wonderful team here, and I just hope that they all,
yeah,
we can all move forward.
And you know,
probably, possibly the $64,000 question. Then, I mean, have you kind of, you know, be interesting to get your thoughts on how do you kind of crack that nut? You know, it sounds like you've had some success, and you brought an example. Just, yeah, it can be quite, you know, maybe looking to some examples you might, or just, you know, what you might have heard of, just because I think that's a key difference, isn't it, between what happens here and what happens in London and the UK.
Very good question. It was actually something I was really kind of obsessed with when I first moved out to New York. And when I was in London, I was planning on coming out here, and I was hoping to do my what's called the management development program. I was going to do a project on the tipping system and about hospitality included, which just kind of became a thing in New York from Danny Meyer. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a quick story about that. I was upstairs having lunch one day, and Scott Reinhart came in. He's the he's kind of the operations director at Gramercy Tavern, and I started picking his brain about how they do it there. I'm not sure if you know, but they don't you're not allowed to leave tips at Gramercy Tavern anymore. Hospitality is included, so they have kind of this system where everyone pays their bill, the food prices are all marked up a little bit higher, but the servers all get paid a competitive salary, and they do some kind of profit sharing or revenue sharing within the restaurant. And I was so intrigued by it, I actually went down and did a stage, kind of trial shift at Gramercy Tavern, and spent a night with him and worked the restaurant floor, which in itself was an amazing experience, because Gramercy Tavern's an iconic New York restaurant. You know, it's one of the old classic restaurants that's been here for quite a long time. Interestingly there, you know, like he was talking about it, and he said it's definitely had a lot of benefits, but it's also had some problems as well, that servers just know in New York what the potential is, you know. I had servers, you know, complaining if they're not making $1,500, like, you know, $1,200 a week take home at certain times of the year, you know. So it's a really, really difficult concept. And I think what we need to do is not so much focus on the money, but focus on the brand itself and the overall kind of, like, what are we offering as a company? You know, what do we offer that's amazing? What's better that you can get anywhere else? So it's about competitive salary, of course. It's also about people who want to, you know, develop their careers. It's about investing in training. It's investing in development. It's about where they want to go. Things like, you know, healthcare packages are huge here as well, because that's different from the UK, where they don't get, you know, the NHS. So we offer great healthcare. We offer very competitive vacation packages. You know, when I first moved here, I was told I'd come from the UK with 20, I think I was on 24 days holiday with loyalty going down to 10 days a year. Yeah. But I luckily got some loyalty transferred over, which is very nice, Ferndale. But, you know, our company really do look after their staff. And I think it's about building a brand image, a brand concept, people believing us and, you know, living by our core values and seeing this is a great place to work. It's a friendly place. We invest in training, we invest in internal promotions, and we'll support people and seeing what people can achieve as well. You know, when you see people around you that have maybe started in a you know, a server position, and they can see the heights that you can get to. You know, like Nick Hamdy, who's our assistant hotel manager, started as well in London, I think 9 years ago with Thunder. He's now AGM in New York. And, you know, myself, I started as a super, well, I started on the graduate program 5 years ago. And again, they see the opportunity for travel, they see the opportunity for progression. It's a hard nut to crack, but I guess it's as well as about finding the right people when you're interviewing at the first initial stage and asking the right questions about is this something you want to progress and develop in your career, or is it just a job to work Monday to Friday or you know, whichever day of the week you're going to be working.
Yeah.
But no, it's still something I'm working on.
I really like that answer, you know, and I think it must be kind of, you know, a bit of a head fuck to some of those servers over here, because they, as you say, they know the number. You know, if you kind of boil what they're looking for down into a number, then it's difficult to compete or impossible to compete. But I agree. I can see where you're offering is something completely different, and it would appeal to a completely different person. And you know, my observation is that it then just becomes increasingly important to communicate that out there. And like you say, when you're sitting down with somebody at the interview, that they know that culture, they know what they're getting into. And it may well be that you have people who are drawn to that culture and that's what they want. And then it kind of, it's like, you know, going into that relationship, both of you with the eyes wide open and not thinking that it's something else, and realizing 3 months down the line that actually, you know, you're not as compatible as you might have thought at the start.
Thinking about further down the line, it's quite hard to say. I think the summertime in New York is very quiet, so I've had the last few weeks to recuperate and kind of catch up with a lot of things. 4th of July is the quietest week I've ever seen in my life in the hospitality industry, but when we come out in September, it's going to be busy again, so that's the time I'm going to start to look at the winter wine list, to be honest. The next change for me there is going to be really focusing on wines by the glass, because what you see in New York is that mainly people only drink wines by the glass. It's remarkable, in fact. Bottles rarely move, and they move, but nothing like anything by the glass. So that's something I've not really changed a lot of at the moment. And if I had changed it immediately, I probably would have made a lot of mistakes, I think, as well, because I would have probably put on some things that maybe weren't interests of our clients, you know. Things like, for example, I took on like this Roussanne from Washington State by a vineyard called Lata, which I absolutely love, but people in Midtown, you know, don't really associate with that type of wines. And I guess it's like a pride thing, you know, it's an ego thing. I'm trying to be interesting and put things on that I think I can educate people with. And you can educate the one or two and do a great hand sale. But I guess it's now, you know, getting the wines on the wine list that, like I said, cover those three boxes. Suppliers are going to be looked after. I'm going to enjoy selling the wines, drinking the wines, tasting the wines, and talking about them with my team. And also the guests can see something. Oh, I know that wine. I can tell a story to my colleague about it, because it's often about show here as well. It's often about that kind of relationship building and networking, and people like to know what they're choosing. So that's my next project, is to really develop the wine list there, and go out to California in the fall and do my WSET training, come back, get everybody certified on WSET level 2. It's definitely going to be something I need to do by next year. I'm in a position now where I've kind of just started taking a more of a helicopter view of the restaurant and the bar and room service and mini bar, and overseeing it more and spending a bit, not less time on the floor, but just letting everybody do their own little projects and kind of empowering people to make their own decisions in the restaurant and building that team, which is amazing. And then, I mean, we look more into the future, I guess, there's Mr. and Mrs. Kent may open another hotel here. I would love to do another opening at some point. I missed the start of this one, but we'll see if that ever happens. If I was ever to leave Ferndale, I think that my career would be opening a bread and wine shop, because I'm obsessed with bread. I'm sure, I don't know if anyone's ever told you, but I've had my own sourdough culture that I snuck into America. I've had for about 5 years, so I make sourdoughs every week, and I would love to have a little kind of bread and homemade bread and wine shop on the corner in Brooklyn somewhere. But we'll see. My wife's desperate to move back to London. So the options are all open still. We're going to wait and see.
Thank you so much to Stuart. It was a pleasure talking with you. I've left details of Ferndale Hotels below. And if you're not already, I'd love you to follow along with me on Instagram and Facebook at Interpreting Wine, or over on Twitter at Wine Podcast. See you next time.